Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do,
that's right. When you don't know what to do, just keep on breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles and from the Big Apple in New York City, from the tiny little place called Fire Island. Welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver at caregiverdave.com, along with my lovely, lovely co-host, Adrienne Gruberg. And she is at thecaregiverspace.org. And we're coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on numerous syndicated radio and podcast networks on 26 global audio and video platforms, including iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Catbox, Mixcloud, and the list goes on. In fact, we're proud to be voted the number one caregiver podcast of the top 50 on Player FM, and number two caregiver podcast on FeedSpot out of the top 60, and number two also on caringvillage.com. And we have a specially exciting show planned for you today, don't we, Adrienne?
Yes, we do.
We met this girl, she's a girl, in New York at the National Publicity Summit, and she has an interesting story. Caregiving with laughter, joy, and practicality when our loved ones decline, how we can approach their care with hope, optimism, and love, and yes, even some humor. Ellen Ritberg was a caregiver to her mother for 6 years. She represented also senior citizens in guardianship and mental hygiene proceedings, and learn from what she saw and from the things he spoke to caregivers about, including many caregiver professionals. But before we get started, I want to thank my last week's guest, Susan Zimmerman. How do you find hope in difficult times? Licensed marriage therapist. And just a reminder, you can watch or listen to that interview and all our interviews, including this one, on our membership website, caregiverdave.com, and also on those other platforms that I mentioned earlier. Okay, enough of that. Welcome to the show, Ellen. And we are so excited to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It's Ellen Ritberg. I'm saying that name right, correct?
Yes, and that is a feat because nobody gets it. Ellen Ritberg, it's a mouthful, I agree.
we've got two Bergs on the show. We've got Adrienne Gruberg and we've got Ellen Ritberg. Let me just start by asking you the question I ask everybody who comes on the show. Who is Ellen Ritberg and why was she placed on this earth?
Oh, that's a very wonderfully meaty philosophical question, but I'll try to be very succinct about it. I am at this point in my life, and I think I've been this way for like most of my life. I ask without realizing that I'm asking, and am I adding or subtracting from the universe? I mean, I really want to live my life that way. I am naturally, I'm told, kind. I try not to gossip. I am empathetic. And all of those things are really good for when you're a caregiver. So, I got into the caregiving space when my mother fell on the night of my first humorous self-help book, which was called 35 Things Your Teen Won't Tell You, So I Will. And I was staying with my mom temporarily, and I realized I just couldn't leave mom alone in the house by herself. So I didn't leave for 6 years, even though I was newly divorced and wanted to start my life and had all these plans and had taken a job in Brooklyn, which is nowhere near Roslyn, New York, where my mom lived and where I had grown up. And so that's who I am. And I'm an attorney who for many years represented seniors in guardianships and also wrote reports for judges to tell them, was a guardianship needed? If, at all, and if so, what were the parameters? What should be the parameters? So you'd think that I knew lots when I entered the caregiving gig, but guess what? I say stress makes me stupid. So I really couldn't use a lot of my professional knowledge in my own personal life. And that makes me very relatable, if you will.
Wow. So you're probably capable of being a judge if you wrote a book that judges are reading.
Yeah, well, I ran twice, but I lost, at which point I said, I really like being an attorney. I'm going to remain an attorney in the trenches And that's what I did for 29 years.
So you wrote some interesting books with some interesting titles. You mentioned the first one. What's that other book that you...
Hello. May I just, be arrantly self-promotional? It's called Why Is Grandma Naked? Caring for Your Aging Parent. And the title was a result of brainstorming with my son, who's a screenwriter and a stand-up comic, and he's an active stand-up comic. He's been doing it for years. And my daughter, who's a digital producer, and a good writer. And so we came up with that title, and then my son said, "Your book is really funny. I'm commissioning the cover." So here's the cover, which, I don't know that the artist needed to show the very, this part, but there it is, for better or for worse.
You see a little crack there.
I didn't want to say the word something crack. Well, the 4-year-olds love that.
What does it mean when he says commission the title?
The cover. With ebooks, your cover is mega, mega important.
Yes.
And having a title that really, makes people...
Yes.
Well, it makes people take notice. Like, they want to click on it and buy my book. So I'm, excited to say when it first came out, it was number one in Aging Parents, and I feel really good about that.
All right.
Good for him. So you were a caregiver. How did that happen? Just fall into it? Did someone take a vote and you won, or did you volunteer? How did someone become a caregiver like you?
That is a great question. What I find is, from my professional experience and from my own personal experience, there's usually, if there's more than one sibling, one of the siblings just takes control or does, lots more of the hands-on things. And in my case, I had one sister that didn't live nearby, and my other sister had retired somewhat recently, and I felt she worked so darn hard, I really didn't want to ask her to do things, which, looking back on it, I wanted to do everything, the martyr mentality, what can I say?
I want to do it myself.
Yeah, we've all been there, right? And thinking I could do everything. Yeah. So I became the caregiver by default and realizing, I've got to do this. I was working full time. And at the beginning, mom needed me to come home, make dinner, watch Jeopardy with her, watch Wheel of Fortune with her, and, et cetera. And then it became Rain more Man. Things that I had to do. What's that?
Yeah, she sounds like Rain Man. Jeopardy. Wheel of Fortune. If you saw the movie.
Yes, I
did. I can relate to watching Jeopardy. I had to do it with my mother-in-law every night.
And I have a chapter about Jeopardy, which if I read something, I was thinking of reading that one chapter. But, there's any number of chapters that are very relatable because,
Does Jeopardy really keep your mind sharp, like jigsaw puzzles, and you won't get dementia?
Well, in my mother's case, she did develop dementia. But part of what I describe is how you can even watch Jeopardy even when mom can no longer answer the questions or ask the questions.
But she still loved it, huh?
Loved it to pieces. And I can tell you how, either by reading the chapter or by telling you, your call.
I want to know what you think was going on in her mind. She couldn't understand the questions or the answers.
Okay.
But she enjoyed listening to it. What do you think was going on?
Okay. I knew, actually. Mom still was verbal, okay? But she had lost, some of the higher functions. And she now, what I decided to do is meet her on her ground, on her level. And she, like everybody that watched Jeopardy, loved Alex Trebek. So what we do is we would talk about his wardrobe. I'd say, Mom... Isn't his tie amazing? And mom would say, he's such a good dresser. we were very attached. I became very attached to him too. And I would say to mom and I noticed his hand was in a cast. This was before, unfortunately, he developed cancer. I think it was pancreatic cancer that ultimately took his life. But we both noticed it was very obvious, but he didn't mention it right away. So like for a few days we discussed, I hope he's okay. Oh dear, did he fall? And then he addressed the audience one night and said, for those of you that have been asking, and also I think mom liked what I call the blissed out set. It's lucite and it's blue and it kind of looks like, Disneyland or something. She really liked that set. We always found something to talk about.
Go ahead with your question, Adrian.
Okay. I know that you're an attorney. How did your experience as an attorney affect or help you as a caregiver with your mom? And did it?
Okay, that's a great question. And which goes back to my issue of stress. Now, I had, from time to time, taken seminars about dementia and guardianships. So I had, either through my professional life or through a seminar, known that people who develop dementia sometimes take off their clothes, and not like before bedtime, and not like in the privacy of a room where there isn't a picture window on a main street, as my mother once disrobed in front of the den picture window, just got up. Now, when she did it, we were sitting at the table, the bridge table. We weren't playing bridge, but I'll call it a bridge table. And mom just started whipping it off. And I was like, Mom, and very stupidly, because I say stress makes me stupid, I said, why did you do that? After I, closed the curtain really fast, because mom lived on two major streets. And of course I didn't get an answer, but she did it because it felt good. Like toddlers who whip off their diapers. It just felt good.
I guess so. I was going to ask you, what was the most surprising thing you ever discovered about being a caregiver to your mother? Maybe that was it, but maybe you got another one. I don't know.
There were a lot of them, because one of the things is your parents' personality is specific to them, okay? And in my mother's case, she always thought people didn't like her, people were talking about her. I'll call it a minor, paranoia or harmless delusions. But she would have these sightings, I'll call them sightings, of neighbors she hadn't seen in 20 or 30 years. And I actually took her over to a computer when she insisted that there was somebody in a car next to her in a parking lot who turned to the passenger, who was that lady's daughter. And she insisted it was somebody she had carpooled with 40 years ago. And she insisted the woman said about my mother in the car next to her, she looks old. And my mother was beside herself that this woman who she carpooled with said this nasty comment to her. And I got so frustrated, and it's so silly. I said, Mom, let's go to the computer. We went to the computer. I Googled the lady's name. I knew in my mind she was either, she had either gone, as in gone off this earth, or gone to Florida, like a lot of people in New York. And there was Mrs. G's name living in Florida. And I, at that point, I said, why am I trying to convince my mother that Mrs. G wasn't the lady next to us that was saying a rude remark that had nothing to do with her? So there's lots of that.
You say you were transformed by your caregiving experience. How so?
Oh, that's really something I really like to talk about. I say we bring ourselves to the caregiving experience, and most of us do it with a wholehearted approach, which I did. But, it depends upon what your relationship is with your parent. Lucky for me, I had a relatively uncomplicated relationship with my mom. I did get along with her, right? But doing those hands-on things, showering my mom for the first time, shopping for her, taking her shopping when she refused to buy a dress for my daughter's wedding 1 week before the wedding, and getting ridiculously, all these things, ridiculously frustrated, all of these things really transform you. And I feel they made me even more empathetic, more kind, more understanding of just everybody in the world, and less judgmental. So that's how I think I ended up changed or transformed, if you will.
Caregivers make mistakes all the time. I made a zillion of them. I'm sure you've made a lot of mistakes. If you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently? Okay. What would you not do differently?
Okay, great. Two things. I would have asked for help sooner, okay, of my siblings. Okay. I would have created a support system earlier, because little by little I needed, and I did add things in. I added in a companion to take her places. I was gone all day. I didn't want to leave mom to make her own lunch, et cetera. And she, at some point she stopped driving or I took away the car keys. And so those are two things that I, you know, I think that I didn't realize I had to do at the point in time when maybe I had to start doing it, got her involved in social programs, senior citizen programs. She'd never been a joiner, but I could have probably gotten her in those programs earlier because she absolutely loved them. Even in her, you know, cognitively, she had declined. And she wasn't a very sociable person except when we went on cruises together. So those are two things that I think that I would have done sooner. And of course, maybe taken away the car keys because I say her car looked like a Picasso sculpture. And she always had really, I don't know, great bogus excuses for the little dings and dents on her car. Yeah. But thank God I never saw blood. There was, you know, she never hit, you know, animate things. So
sounds like my teenager.
that's another thing.
So how is she sociable on cruises? That's interesting.
That's really interesting. My mother, I would say, was an almost pathologically shy person. She had a good sense of humor. And like my father, who'd been dead many years, she said to me, "Your father, I called him voiceover because he spoke for the two of us." I think that's kind of a funny thing to say, right? When she went on cruises, we would go on a cruise where they put you at a set table where you don't know people.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, my mother felt she wasn't being judged. And in that, in not feeling judged, she was a person who was self-educated and read a lot. And she never trotted out her knowledge, but she was interesting to talk to. So, I mean, we were at a table with somebody who was the sheriff of Nottingham, and he wasn't in time travel. He wasn't in Robin Hood. He was an actual sheriff. And when we talked to my mother, he said to me, "Your mother is such an interesting person because she read a lot of biographies. She liked history. So, you know, she brought something to the table and got very confident and outgoing." So in answer to your question, figuring out what makes your parent tick, even as they change and their personality changes,
right,
very helpful. Yeah.
Well, I hope you took her on a lot of cruises.
I did. I was a guest lecturer for a number of years. I actually taught creative writing on my cruises. I used to. I'm also a playwright and I'm also a poet. So I did transatlantic cruises. I took mom, you know, she went to Polynesia with me. We went many places, and I feel gratified that I could show her that was she loved best.
Wonderful.
Yeah, a lot of pictures, right?
A lot of pictures. I should post more of them on my Ellen Ritberg author website and Facebook, you know. Little plug for my for my website.
Great caregiver, you
Ellen or ellenritberg.com.
Yeah. And everybody go and do likewise. Do fun things with your loved one. You know, maybe you can go on cruises, but you can do other things. You know, you gotta be creative.
Yeah, Dave, so well said. You know, I took mom to the orchid show at the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, and that was a very crowded show. She was already in a wheelchair because she couldn't walk barely at all or just no distance. And, you know, everybody gave us a wide berth. Nobody stood in their path. I mean, it really is gratifying to how people realize about your parent and, you know, that they have their own needs and they need to accommodate them.
Mm-hmm.
She reminds me of Lisa and her mother, Adrian.
Yeah.
Tell us who's Lisa. Tell us.
Lisa Hirsch. Her mother had Alzheimer's for 19 years. She passed this year. She was just shy of 100. Lisa just found her mother after her mother became ill.
How wonderful.
Developed a relationship. And
You know, caregiving is a gift. We don't look at when we're in it. And where I was like a human stress ball, you know, those little balls you squeeze, right? If you looked at me, I wasn't as lovely to look at as on a good day, you know, on a day before caregiving, let's put it that way. But, you know, we do benefit from it. And relationship wise, I became very close to my mom. I learned all kinds of things about her. She opened up to me and told me things she told no one else. I felt, you know, the Smothers Brothers, I was the favorite. You know, I didn't feel I was the favorite, but you feel favored.
Right. Mom always liked me best.
Right. Mom always liked me best. Even if it wasn't true, embrace it, right? Embrace it while you're showering your mom and, you know, getting a bit freaked out by the experience.
And that's interesting, showering your mother for the first time. I never had to do that. How do you think caregivers can become better caregivers? Is it a natural thing?
That is such a good question. I have a philosophy. I think that every person on the planet pretty much needs to feel needed. Okay. And those of us that have children, whether they're grown or young, you know, we certainly felt needed when we were parents. I'm a grandparent. The first 5 months of COVID, I stepped into the parent's shoes while the parents worked, and I felt so needed and so happy to be able to do the things that I was doing. And do you know, in so far as thinking to myself as I showered my mom, I'm probably going to look like this down the road, you know, even though I used to be a gym rat for a lot of my years prior to caregiving, you know, and it's a wake up call. And it actually, I think, keys us into what it is like to age and what the aging body is, if you will, you know.
Yeah. We all start looking like our parents, don't we?
I know.
You know.
Even if you were a Pilates right? Even if you did your Pilates and what have you, right?
Yeah.
So are you saying that you sort of put yourself in that position to become a better caregiver, to understand what she might be going through?
Yes. You know what? That's such an insightful question. And thank you for asking me that, Adrienne, because one of the things is my mother was always a very serious, most of the time, very serious, dignified and quiet person.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to give her the respect that she deserved. Even, you know, we should all respect our parents, you know. So, you know, it was a way to make, I think, it easier. I think on some level, it was almost like a subconscious thing, if you know what I mean. I think that was underlying how I approached my task. I approached it with an open heart and I wasn't resentful. And I didn't feel, oh, why am I doing this? I never felt that way. And, you know, I became more philosophical about it afterwards and when I started to write this book. But I also, I write humorous how-to books. I mean, I started out as a humorous essayist. And my second essay was published in the New York Times. I like to write fun because it helps people. You know, as I say, you have all these stresses and your plate is usually very, very full, even if you're doing it full-time and don't have a full-time job. It's a very intensive thing you're going through and you need somebody to help you lighten the load. So I'm hoping Why Is Grandma Naked Caring for Your Aging Parent does that, right?
You know, I always talk about how support is so important and just not neglecting your social activities. You know, if you used to go out with a friend to the gym every Tuesday, keep doing it. And, you know, you need some kind of place where you can vent, but you shouldn't vent to those friends who you depend on social activities. You should keep them separate. The support should go to the support group or people who are probably caregivers like you. You vent with them, they vent with you. You know, you get it both off of your chest and you feel better. And then, because if you do that to your friends, they're going to stop calling. They're going to start coming by. Nobody wants to be around Debbie Downer. Have you found that's true?
I found that my older sister was a really good person to vent to and to bounce ideas off of. You know, thank God she was there because she wasn't doing the hands-on stuff. And so she was always available. And, you know, I don't know, I did it, you know, all that often. I did it enough so that when I was really stressed out, she approached it with more of a logic and more of an objectivity, even though it's our mother, than I had, because I was too close to the situation. So, you know, if you have a sibling that's doing, you know, you could say less, you know, less, and they're not just not involved in the day-to-day, you know, hands-on stuff, call upon them because, you know, they're going to want to pitch in, you know, include your siblings if you can, and if they want to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My younger sister built a ramp and that was really wonderful. Her and her significant other. And that was so, so vital to helping mom get out of the house, you know?
Yeah. And siblings are different from friends because friends, they don't have a clue what's going on. They don't have a clue what you're going through. Those are the ones that you need to shield and protect. The siblings, typically, you know, if it's a parent, they're a part of it. So, yeah, you're right. She was kind of a caregiver, too. So you were two caregivers venting to each other, kind of.
Yeah, or she could come up with a she came up with a suggestion that was helpful that I hadn't thought of in my in my stress and kind of, I say stress makes me stupid, so I hadn't thought of it. And who knows, you know, her mind, we're very different in personality, so she looked at it differently, you know.
I mean, I think you sort of answered this question already about the things that contributed to your mother's happiness, other than the cruises. What could you do to make your mother happy?
Okay. Generally speaking, you know, in her early stages of, you know, she had judgment issues, she liked going out to dinner, you know, and I'd come home from work. And I only had three recipes. I really wasn't a very good cook. So, I mean, I understand she might have gotten tired of my recipes, but she would very gently let me know she'd like to go, you know, eat at a diner. And we went to a diner where we both got separate salads, but we could share the main course because they'd give us a big main course. It was a So that was something I could do for
her.
She
had tact even in her state.
She really did. She really did. She used to say to me, Ellen, would you mind getting me a glass of water? I just thought to myself, I'm your daughter. I'm sitting down or just at the other end of the house, I'm happy to do that for you. She was very, you know, shy and you know, undemanding, which, you know, I guess.
Wow.
Knew who you were always.
I'd say really almost, you know, to the, you know, I would say almost
what
to
a
the
blessing.
End. Yeah. Yeah, it is a blessing. But what else I did that I think was important is, I got her involved in a social group, and this very dignified lady ended up like putting on for the Halloween party at the frail elderly group, Glencoe Senior Center. I love you. I have a picture. They took a picture to show me. It was mom wearing a fright wig. I mean, one of these black things. And, you know, and mom smiling broadly and having the time of her life. And she never joined groups throughout her entire adult life. And she made, you know, she made a spoon holder with the arts and crafts stuff. She never did arts and crafts. She did things she would not have normally done, you know, pre her, you know, her declining state or her, you know, cognitively diminished state, if you will.
I mean, you said that she was sort of shy about asking for water and things. Was she always like that, or
She always was. Parents' personality. My father was a salesman, and I have a more me and my sister. One of my sisters, we have outgoing personalities, but she was, you know, a very quiet person, and it could be because she was married for years to somebody who was her voiceover. Who the heck knows? But I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with your childhood, and she didn't have a happy childhood, and she learned not to, you know, make noise, or, you know, she learned silence, and silence can be, you know, not a good thing. You know, sometimes, you know, we learn lessons from our parents, and passivity, as we all know, is not really good. You have to ask for what you want, you know, or do what you want sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm running out of questions here, but I wanted to ask you the opposite of happiness. When and how does your mother get upset or irritated or just not a nice person?
Okay.
I don't want to remember her that way, but who are dealing with this. And unlike you, they're dealing with it all the time.
Yes. Okay. Mom got very, how should we say, unnice when I forgot to bring her home blueberries. And I will explain to you about blueberries. And I'll explain to you in my book, I talk about routines. I don't know about you. I'm a very habitual person. I mean, if it were even, except for like during COVID, every morning I'd go out and eat that same bagel and get those hard-boiled eggs and my coffee made the same exact way. And I used to stop at the same coffee stand and the person knew me, right? Right? Now, when you have a parent that is cognitively declining, boy, do those routines and expectations become more hardened, if you will, and they need them to feel that they live in an orderly universe. So what happened was, I came home one day really, really tired. I usually stopped at the grocery store. I didn't ask for the food to be delivered. I like to pick mom's fruit for her. And I was just too tired. And the minute I walked in, mom said, where are my blueberries? And I was like, oops. I felt so darn guilty. She let me know. She didn't scream. She just let me know how unhappy she was. You know, she didn't give me the silent treatment as she would have when I was like growing up and I was rude to her, you know, but it wasn't fun, you know, and bear that in mind. I think that that's something we can learn if you're a caregiver and you're newly at that task or you're going to be doing it. Don't disturb routines at work and make them happy. Do not.
Well, if that's the worst you've got, then you were a very blessed person.
You know what?
Let sounds me tell like you a real something. Sweetheart.
Well, you know what? I thank you for that. You know what? Sometimes, you know, if we are blessed with cheerfulness, and not everybody is, I realize this at a certain point in my life, being cheerful is a blessing. We all can have our dark, you know, a dark day or a day when we get real, you know, like you say, Debbie Downer or negative. Yeah. But we know that. That's not our essential self, if you will, yeah. You know, and so if you do have that, or you can find the things that make you more cheerful and they're not injurious to people, do them, you know, make sure to do them. We are all entitled to happiness.
Amen. So let's talk about your books. Why don't you take a minute or two and read a funny part in your Naked Grandma book?
Okay. All righty. I'll read you a section that has to do with elevated status. Okay. Cause you're going to have, if you're the person that steps in, okay, you're the designated hitter. Okay. So you're in an elevated position in the eyes of others, other family members, including your adult children, if you have any, and your siblings may tell you what a good child you are. However, you probably won't hear their hosannas. You're too busy caring for your parent. The benefits of doing right by your parents are, one, you're setting a great example for your children who, when you show signs of decline, may rise to the occasion being you, okay? However much your friends and some of your relatives respect you, they will respect you all the more because you haven't sought out their praise. And if you do seek out praise, really? Do you really need to? You should feel good that you assume the position of chief caregiver, decision maker, because A, you believe in the concept of respecting your parent. Okay, B, so you don't totally buy into that concept, but you still love your parent. C, once you embarked upon the journey, you decided there was no turning back. D, all of the above. Or E, you're not sure which of the above you agree with, but okay, one of the above. You know, that's not one of my funniest ones. I mean, I have chapters about incontinence. I mean, there's chapters about, you know, just things that just tickle you about how they totally lose their inhibitions, and you have to deal with the fallout from it. They say outrageous things to people, and like, you know, you're like,
you have to look not to be embarrassed.
Yes, you really do. You have to figure out strategies that work for you. But I tell you this while you're going through them, you know, and I tell you that you can't meet all your parents' needs. We're not all good at everything, you know. No one is, you know. Get off that high horse, you know.
Yeah, you know, my wife can't speak anymore, and so we joke around a lot. We're a very happy, funny relationship, and some people, you know, they just look at people like us and they think that we should be serious. You know, there's a serious thing that's happened, and you know, you're joking around like it's no big deal. They just don't get it, you know. But maybe one day they will. That laughter is healing to the bones, and if I don't laugh, you know, you might just have to cry, you know?
Yeah. You know what? Oh, so true. So very true. Or sometimes you can almost laugh until you cry, you know, like when I saw my mother naked in front of the window, you're not laughing at her. You're just laughing at the absurdity. And it is an absurd situation that you never thought you yourself would deal with. You know, even if you saw it professionally, it doesn't matter. You know,
it worked the other way too. You could cry until you laugh. Those emotions are very tied to each other.
Oh, yeah.
How can someone get a hold of you if they want to buy your books or talk to you or pick your brain or just have a good laugh with you over the phone or email?
Okay. Well, I have a website, which is Ellen Ritberg. That's ELLENRITTBERG.com. And I have a professional email address, which is ellen@ellenritberg.com. On my website, I've got wonderful podcasts such as yours. And we, you know, my resources are interviews and articles I've written and funny essays I've written. So visit my website, but my book can be found on Amazon and all the major platforms. If there are some people they don't want to buy from Amazon for whatever reason, I'm on Google Play. those of you in Canada, I'm on Kobo. I'm on all of those platforms. My book is everywhere. Just Google, Why is Grandma Naked? You don't need the subtitle, Caring for Your Aging Parent.
It's probably in China, too. And boycott China, you can go to other places.
Yeah. And I'll just tell you, I do have a poetry book that just came out this past month called He Is Walking Wider. And it's about family members. And there's poems about mom. And some of them are funny. They're about dating, which is, you know, it can be funny when you're my age and attempting to date, which I didn't while caregiving. It was just, I didn't have any of the emotional juice for that, you know.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great meeting you. It was a great show.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for having, I mean, we've had fun. Isn't life about, you know, like you say, how do we exist without laughter, really?
Did you have fun, Adrian?
Oh, it's always fun talking to new people and hearing what they have to say and being stimulated. And you have such a positive attitude. It's very refreshing.
Thanks. Well, so do both of you. I mean, it's really, I have to say, you know, this has been fun.
Many caregivers are not fun. They're miserable. They're always negative. They're always looking at the worst case scenario. You know, I've got 35,000 on my Facebook page. Adrian has hundreds of thousands on hers.
Wow. And many of them
complain
about everything, you know. So you are a rare flower in a field of weeds.
May I quote you? That's so sweet to say that, really. You know, and we all need affirmations. We all need to hear good things, don't we, about ourselves and about the world and about, you know, how we can, you know, turn something that we think might be a burden or negative into something positive.
Something positive.
And life-affirming.
All right. Well, and everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time, same place. Bye-bye.
Thanks again, guys. Bye.
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too, Thrive to Stay Alive as a Caregiver. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through because he is one. He now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his amazing caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too, Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today or buy one for your special caregiver on sale everywhere and at caregiverdave.com.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing.